Welcome to the Thunder Buddies podcast. I am Joe Masato, joined, of course, by Joel Lorenzi. Joel was in Denver last night on Saturday night. We're recording this on Sunday night. And Joel, we've talked about, you know, a couple chances for the Thunder to get a signature win. I would say that the Thunder's 118 to 117 win in Denver on Saturday night was their signature win of the season.
Yeah, it's hard to have a discussion now. Like, I think it was debatable with, you know, their Golden State trip and just the fashion and how they had to win that game. And, you know, Golden State, the optics there, because it is Golden State. Obviously, since then, like I mentioned this in my story, I think yesterday, like the optics with the Golden State win maybe have changed for some people because Golden State's kind of unraveled and whatever, they're like kind of in shambles. I don't think it takes away from what they did that day. But I mean, the fashion of this game, just the way it unfolded, obviously the defending champion, they almost never lose their step, even when you know, Jamal Murray was out. And so this is still a formidable team. This is still the team you have to beat in the West to me. And the way they did it, basically never having control of that game until Shea's shot, is like, that felt like a statement win for sure. I think everybody can agree on that.
Yeah, it wasn't one of those nights where, you know, the Nuggets just had a bad game and, you know, the Thunder were able to come in there and surprise them. I mean, the Nuggets were in control throughout. Thunder made some huge plays on both ends of the floor down the stretch. And we got to start at the very end. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, less than a second left, hits the game winner. It looked like the most, like, casual, easy game. Like, I had little doubt it was going in. I mean, it just seemed like he got to his perfect spot. And as you wrote about after the game, kind of was emotionless afterward. He's just kind of been kind of like a silent killer type.
Yeah, it's almost like he's been conditioned to do that, because you've seen the evolution of how he reacts to game winners. And maybe some of the elements of it were that there was still 0.9 left. That's more than enough time for a team like the Nuggets to kind of draw something up and make something happen. But even after, you know, when the buzzer sounded, there's no emotion there. Like, you don't see anything. And you've seen the evolution. Like, back when he hit that game winner against the Clippers, he's doing all type of dances and all that. Like, that was not the case yesterday. And I don't know if it's because, you know, everything that, you know, they won't admit it, but everything that's going to go into this matchup, not just this year and now in this moment, but in the year to come, you know, Mike Malone kind of talked about it before the game in terms of, you know, the alignment between the two teams, what OKC is trying to do and what Denver was trying to do a few years ago and how similar it is. Like, there's some weight to this matchup. So I don't know if that had something to do with it in terms of how much he just wanted to, you know, just take care of business. But there was no emotion behind it. And maybe that's just the kind of player. I mean, he's talked this year about, you know, trying to be one of the best players ever. Like, the dialogue with him has kind of changed. Like, he's taking a more serious tone about his career and about, you know, the team's direction. And I imagine some of that has leaked into this too cool, emotionless, like, cowboy guns ablaze type thing, you know? So
it kind of fits his whole vibe. Like, you know, off the court, he's like, you know, Mr. GQ, everything's cool. And, you know, on the court, it's like, he's not doing anything unexpected. He's just kind of going about his business. Wherein, like, on the inside, you know, he's got to be going crazy and fired up because it's a big time win. But Joel, I thought what struck me last night was, especially down the stretch, when you talk about the Thunder's big three, I think it's fair to use this now with Shai, J-Dub, and Chet. All of those guys made huge plays down the stretch. I wrote a little bit more about Chet's 9 blocks, which was the most blocks in any NBA game this season. And his total line had only been matched by 4 other rookies in NBA history. So he had 17 points, 11 rebounds, 9 blocks. The other rookies to do that are all Hall of Famers. So Alonzo Mourning, Shaq, David Robinson, and Ralph Sampson. So when you're sharing the company with some of the best bigs of all time, it's pretty special. And man, that, like, his 9th block was that, you know, from behind, getting Aaron Gordon, who's one of the best leapers in the NBA probably still. And he just deterred so much at the rim, even with Jokic. I thought he battled Jokic, and you saw so much improvement from, you know, that first home game of the season when the Nuggets blew the Thunder out, to the Thunder and Chet specifically adapting to the matchup.
Yeah, no, and I don't know if it was I mean, I understand, to my understanding, Jokic is not the happiest person on earth when they lose, and just on certain days. But the way he talked about Chet was like, I don't know, there was a mix of like, he almost, I think when I asked, he kind of cut me off. I was like, yeah, like he was good, he was good. Like, come on, y'all watch the game. Like, you know he was good, and he was just, he's, I think his exact words are, he did a great job of just being there. Like, he was around. I think that's a theme for teams, like. The deterrence, just the sheer presence for a dude that Jokic himself said he needs to get fatter. Like, it hasn't looked that way as he plays scenes and they're like steering away from the rim and he's getting like tip blocks. I mean, there was that one sequence in the third quarter where he had three blocks in a row. Like, some of the shit he's doing is unreal. And you mentioned a company that he's in, and it's like none of those dudes are from the modern era. Like, you're not seeing modern era rookies do that stuff, man. Like, it's it I think what we're witnessing is special, and it was probably appropriately timed because I think we are at such prisoners at the moment, and the Wemby, I think the Wemby candidacy for rookie of the year was probably starting to heat up, and Chet's because of the drop off in efficiency from three. I don't know what he is in recent games, but the other night I think he was like 3 for his last 17 or something going in a sack. Not great. So his momentum was starting to die down, but you have a performance like that on that stage against a team like that. And I mean, Denver, I think, took, I wrote this in my story. I don't remember the exact percentage, but they took like 42% of their shots last night around the rim. Like, they spent a lot of time around the rim, and he spent a lot of time just tormenting them, bro. It was insane.
Yeah, I've got the shot chart pulled up. So the Nuggets at the rim were 18 of 37, which is 48.6%. League average at the rim is 65.7%. So they were, 18 points below league average. The Thunder, meanwhile, was 25 of 33 at the rim. That's 76%. So I mean, that's the shots that Chet is blocking, but also just the shots that he's making really uncomfortable down there. And yeah, you mentioned all those names. I mean, none of them are, none were rookies this century. I mean, you got to go back to like the early 90s when guys were putting up these kind of stat lines. And obviously, he's just so advanced on the offensive end as well. He's, I don't know, man. I mean, the rookie of the year race, I feel like we're at the point where it was a foregone conclusion before the season that Wemby was going to win. And it's like, hey, Chet, you got to pay attention to him. And right now it's like Chet by a mile. Like, I just think what he's
Low
doing and it
key.
contributing to winning is pretty cut and dry.
Yeah, that's what separates it, the impact on winning. And that's the same with, Shea's case in terms of MVP, the leap they've made as a winning team, and how serious it's starting to look, how serious we have to take them. Like, that's factoring into all these cases for awards. And like you said, bro, nobody from this century, like, dude, they was delivering milk and trucks back then when these dudes were rookies. You know what I'm saying? Like, he is like,
Were they
he.
still doing that in the 90s? Come on.
I mean, shit, you would know better than I would. You don't want to
I
watch. By the
yeah.
way, if you're listening to this, I mean, you are going to be listening to this later than his birthday, but happy belated to Joe Blow himself. You're officially 30. You're officially at the age where Sam Presti probably wouldn't trade for you at this juncture. So, congrats on being washed.
I'm 30. I think it's an appropriate age for me. I feel like I'm
You feel 30. You feel very 30.
Yeah, I'll just say I'm in my 30s, but thank you. Thank you very much. I was watching this game on my birthday, but
Would have spent it. It was a good game, still.
Dub was good. Anything you want to say about him?
Dub? I do. I didn't want to. I didn't think last night was the time for this because of how many layers there were to this game. I did think it was interesting because my story on this did run in the paper about his role in that second unit and them using him as a primary. I thought it was pretty frustrating to watch just the way those minutes unfolded yesterday. Like, I think to start that second quarter, it was him and Chet in the lineup. That's who was leading that lineup. No Shea, obviously. And I think I don't think they definitely lost those minutes. I don't know about how much, but it was non Jokic, non Murray minutes. Like, this was like DeAndre Jordan, Reggie Jackson minutes. Like, these were like, this was not a good lineup in the year of our Lord 2023. And they lost those minutes like badly. And then to start the fourth quarter, they were better, but still lost those minutes to like Christian Brown, Julian Schroder, like probably not what you want to see. And I don't think, I can't remember, no, because that Denver game was just so heavy. But I think in SAC, something similar unfolded. So not a great week for the case I made in that story. But you look down a stretch. And I think he probably learned from some of those minutes, because you look down the stretch, and when he's next to Shea, when he's next to whoever, dude, he had some crazy plays in that fourth quarter. I mean, he was huge when Shea got the steal on Michael Porter, and kicked it up to Chet for the lob. He was huge. I mean, we've seen it get buried, but people are kind of starting to like dig it up today after in the aftermath. But that layup with, however many seconds to go, I think it was like the bucket right before Shays with like 30 something seconds left. He's jumping in the, I mean, the entire team collapsed. He's jumping in like three or four dudes, and he finished that with ease. I mean, when I'm watching, I'm like, yo, that's a bad shot. But it really didn't look that way at all by the time it went down. That was insane. And it got buried, obviously, because Shay did what Shay did, and Chet did what Chet did. But he was pretty good too yesterday.
He came in last year just as a third-year college guy, is more like physically advanced, but then it was a whole big deal this offseason with, how much muscle he put on. But like you can see that in some of his takes to the rim where he's just like not afraid to go in there, and he's able to finish through traffic, which is really impressive.
Yeah, there are two plays I think people should go back and watch that I went back and watched and was like, damn, like in terms of the, like you mentioned, the muscle building, like there, I think in the final, I don't remember if this was the final minute, it was definitely in the final 2 minutes where Shea crosses half court, he sees what's about to unfold from the defense, he kicks up to J-Dub in stride, and I think Michael Porter Jr. is trying to get set, so J-Dub goes left, bumps off him, and like gets as much separation as he's ever gonna need, and gets that little short pull up. And then there was a play earlier in the game when Dub had one of those dunks, and he just absolutely trucked Michael Porter Jr., dude, like in the most legal way possible. Like it was like a Madden hit stick, bro. It was insane.
If there's a negative from this game, I think it was, I mean, not like a negative with necessarily how he played, but just the trend of how Josh Giddey's season has gone. Giddey, per usual, he's still in the starting lineup, but he played 15 minutes and 20 seconds, which he's in his third NBA season now. You can even go back to his rookie year. That's the fewest minutes he's played in any game in his career. We know the off-court stuff, we know the on-court stuff. It's just been a really bad year overall. For Josh Giddey, I don't know what the if there's anything else to say on that, but like they're at the point now where it's clear that Mark is not afraid to just go away from him early if he doesn't see it there on the defensive end, or if he doesn't look particularly engaged. I mean, I was watching on TV. It's like the boos every time he touched the ball were loud again last night. Just what can you any you see any light at the end of the tunnel for this for Josh Giddey's play right now?
Can't say I do, man. And I don't know that it's like I haven't been around a while. I don't know Presti's tendencies 100%. It doesn't feel like he's the type of dude to just get off of Giddey in a trade just because of all that's surrounding him and how he's playing now. I think they're real long term. I still think they see a vision for him. I don't know that I personally do. I know the fans are like completely disinterested and have probably moved on from him already, which, I mean, looking at this stretch of games now, it's no longer a trend. Like that's probably fair. In terms of his minutes now and where he sits in the rotation, I think Mark, like you said, he's come to the understanding like he won't close games. Starting probably doesn't mean as much as to him at least as it does to other people. And I think like I've written this before, but when people want to slot Isaiah Joe there. I just think Isaiah Joe is so necessary to their second unit, so necessary to those dub minutes to start the second quarter, just necessary to a lot of lineups that just don't start the game, for a pop like that, for necessary offensive pop. And so, like, yeah, he would probably be more than fine in the starting lineup. I just don't think Mark values that whole who's starting and who's not as much as other people. But I mean, yeah, there has to be something. There has to be a tweak, like, and I think Cliff Brunt kind of hinted at this in a question he asked a couple weeks ago, and that, has Mark thought about, adjustments and tweaking, that kind of thing. And I think what Cliff was really getting at was like, hey, have you thought about doing anything but start Giddey? Like, have you thought about him running the second unit? And maybe they're so in tune with J. Dub running that second unit for development or whatever the case may be. But Mark kind of brushed it off. Mark, man. I don't think he would delve deep into that. But I think that's probably the next step for them. And then if that doesn't work, I mean, his fate here. I mean, you see, he's clearly not the most his fit as one of the cogs is not the best now. I mean, people are already thinking about marketing and whatever. I mean, fans have been pitching that for since the summer, and so I think fans are like completely disengaged with him by now.
Yeah, I'm guilty of this too, but I mean, we just have very short memories when it comes to things like this. Like, it was less than a year ago. It was like 9 months ago that Josh Giddey just had a phenomenal game against the Pelicans in the Thunder's play-in win, which, got them to that game at Minnesota, one game away from the playoffs. As a 20-year-old last year, 16.6 points, 7.9 rebounds, 6.2 assists, on 48% shooting. So that wasn't that long ago. Obviously, a lot has changed. He's still just 21 years old. The thing about trading him, like, I'm reminding myself of like what he has done, because it's like I'm in the same boat where it's like, yeah, I don't really see the fit, like. This isn't working. But like, Sam Presti is a pretty smart guy, and I don't think he's going to trade Josh Giddey at Josh Giddey's lowest possible value. Like, you could have traded Josh Giddey in the offseason and gotten a ton. If you trade Josh Giddey now, you're getting the off-court baggage and you're getting a guy who looks completely lost. So I think it benefits the Thunder to stick with him to at least see if he can figure this out.
Yeah, they probably got to see it through. Two more things I'll add before we move on. Like you said, like I'm seeing there are so many delusional fans that are like they want to center a marketing package around him, like around him and like Dort or something. It's like, dude. Do you think J Danny Ainge is a dumbass? Like, let's get real. Like these are two dudes who are like probably in terms of GMs across the league have the biggest piss fest with anybody. Like, they are gonna try to be the ultimate masterminds, and I don't think they'd be trying to fleece each other. I think they both get what they need out of said trade. But Giddy's like a like this is a non-starter if you're centering your package around Giddey at this point in time. And then I mean, kind of like you said, they got to see it through. But at the same time, it's been amazing to me, just to see like maybe amazing is not the right word. It's been insane just to see the amount of time it takes before teams, scout teams, whatever, adjust to said player or whatever the case may be. Like in 3 years. Giddey's like completely ineffective versus, when he was a rookie, he was getting casual triple doubles. Like, it's insane how this whole thing is unfolded. So,
Yeah, I mean, the Thunder is just getting schemed for in ways that they weren't going through the rebuild. That's what happens when you become a good team and you're surrounded by more talent and everything like that. Let's get into this a little bit. Speaking of trades, so I was listening to our good friends on Down to Dunk, and Alex Spears brought up the point that, if anything, the Thunder's history has taught us that when you think a window is wide open, it might not be as open as you think. With the first iteration of the Thunder, three future MVPs on the squad. And if the Thunder, even if they defy logic about being this good, this young, even if We all know Chet's a rookie, but he's a rookie playing at an all-star or near all-star level. I don't think the Thunder's sense of urgency is changing whatsoever. I think they are just over the moon that the team is gelling this quickly. I think they are very much still viewing this year as let's see what we have, and what they have is a lot better than anyone, even them, expected. But at the same time, like, I'm not gonna be like, oh, you don't know what you're talking about to people that say maybe they should make a splashy trade. I have no idea what that is. I don't think this team is a championship contender. But yeah, it's I get the argument that, you know, the window seems wide open for 2, 3, 4, 5 years to come. It's not always that, but at the same time, like, the Thunder got a great win at Denver last night. The Thunder, this version of the Thunder has not played in a playoff series. Shea has played in one playoff, well, two playoff series, his rookie season with the Clippers. They lost to the Warriors, then first season with the Thunder in the bubble, losing to the Rockets. Shea has yet to win a playoff series. So I would say, like, be excited about where the Thunder is, but like, is this the time where you know it's like you can just, you know, push the gas pedal down? I'm not quite there yet, Joel.
Yeah, I'm not either. And people are going to be pissed probably by the end of this year because I think if Presti makes any deadline moves, it's going to be for some reserve or some
Yeah.
rotational dude. Like, it's not going to be. I was talking to Tony Jones last night in Denver, who covers the Jazz. And we were just laughing about the ideas people have of packages for marketing, the idea of, how think, one, what kind of player they think he is because of the packages they're trying to throw out there, but also how. Maybe not gullible, but how bendable they think Danny Ainge is. Like, it's gonna take a miracle package, probably something that features Jalen Williams, which I imagine is a non-starter.
Yeah,
So
that's
that's
not a
like,
starter.
so that's off the table. And then when you look across the board, Markkanen, and this is like, I'm not basing this off any rumors. This is purely based on what people thought was a great fit dating back to the summer. Markkanen is probably the best guy because he where he is right now, what kind of player he is, what he can add to this team without maybe subtracting a ton. But also, I have made the argument that people shouldn't view it as strictly additive. And so, yeah, like you said it, this team hasn't reached a playoff series. You can't just add a all-star caliber guy as your third or fourth option mid-year and expect them to win. I mean, I think people, what they're really trying to see is a NBA Finals this year, which is like crazy to me. They're talking about championship window and stuff like that. And I mean, not only are you not guaranteed to win multiple playoff series, but you're not guaranteed to reach a finals if you bring him through. So it's like, I don't know, people are delusional. They're also like kind of not in tune with, I think, Presti's values. I'm fully under the belief that this team they want to see, like, kind of like you said, what this team can do first before they start seeing what's really missing, if they have to make a big splash, if they can ride out with the core three and just add subtle pieces. People are, they're excited about this thing because there are so many good contracts on this team and whatever. But I don't know that it's smart to act on a big splash, especially when the big splash that makes the most sense is probably not as attainable as people are dreaming of.
Yeah, and like, you know, the obvious guy to include in trade talks, like we just said, Josh Giddey, it's like doesn't make any sense now. And I look at it like, okay, you've got a starting lineup, Giddey, of course, SGA, Holmgren, J-Dub, Dort. You feel good about that. Off the bench, Isaiah Joe, you want him to keep playing minutes. You don't want to take anything away from Cason Wallace. Kenrich Williams and Aaron Wiggins, I would trust both of those guys with my life. You feel completely safe when they're out on the floor. Maybe it's that Jay Will spot, like he plays 22 minutes last night. Maybe, you know,
I
but
think
then
they have some good minutes too.
we're talking about a backup big though. Like I just don't, even if you add like some splashy piece, like are you wanting to like take minutes away or move off any of these young guys right now? Like, I think it's the best case scenario.
Yes, agreed. And that's why I say you can't view this thing, even if you do have the chance to add marketing, is in the best case scenario where you don't give up what you view as like a huge core piece moving forward. You can't just view this thing as strictly additive, especially if it's a mid-season add. Like, that's something you still have to work through. There has to be some role definition there. Like, it's not strictly additive, man. Especially when you're like trying to win a NBA finals this year. This is what it seems like people are like aiming for. Like, come on, dude.
Listen, if the everyone's expectations are skewed based on what's happened so far, but if the Thunder wins a playoff series and then gets bounced in round two, I think that is a definite win this season for this team to win a playoff series. Like, I think it's a little too much to go too much further than that. But again, I'm the one that continually underestimates them, and they have been mighty good. Joel, we're going to
This is
end
true.
with this today. Tim Bontemps from ESPN, he puts together ESPN's MVP straw poll, basically gets a pool of voters that will represent the actual people who are going to be voting on this award. I've been a voter the past few
Are
seasons.
we both getting votes?
I doubt I will be as to this season, and if I am, I will gladly defer to you since you're going to be around the league
That's heavy.
more than I am. So the Bontemps straw poll obviously isn't as serious, but it's like the perfect snapshot of kind of where this race is. So just like on the official MVP ballot, he asked us to submit five names in order. We both sent in our names, and we don't know what the other has sent in. Should we start from five and then work our way
Yes,
up?
from five. And I'm gonna preface this by saying Tim DM me. His last message to me was, "I think all your MVP sentiments are accurate. So prepare to be wrong," by the
Oh,
way. But
wow. I did not get that sort of affirmation from
of
him.
course you
So
didn't. Let's go with five. What's your five?
number five, I've got Giannis.
Oh, how could you? That's nasty work. Oh, that's
You have
bad.
him higher, is what I'm guessing.
Yes, of course. Tell me why you have him at five.
Okay. If I tell you that, listen, I had him fifth when I did this exercise last week.
Sure.
He's putting up insane numbers, 31.6 points. He's
Had a 64-point game since last week.
he's shooting a career high 63% from the field. It's nuts. I hated the whole game ball situation and how he acted on that.
This
I'm
is
not.
why you're joking. You're joking. You're joking. Joe, get off the pod. Are you kidding me? This can't be your reasoning. Yo, strip. I hope the NBA is listed to strip this man of his
For
vote
the
this.
straw poll, you're gonna strip me of my straw poll vote?
Yes. What a
No,
nerdy
I think I would have had
speech.
him there regardless. I'm just saying I didn't like that. That was ridiculous. But anyway,
Who
I have him
cares?
fifth. Who is your number?
It wasn't the best thing optics-wise, but
Who's your number five?
my five is Luka. Only
Hmm.
because and he you know what, he probably could move up some, but I just think it's hard for me to say, oh, you know, I should move the other few down because I think the four above him are like pretty damn good right now, and they're all on good teams. The one knock to Giannis, I'll say, is that the Bucks haven't been as good as I thought they would be, and obviously they got some things to work out. This whole Dame pairing is new. I think there are ways they can use each other that just haven't been used to the degree yet. There are probably some questions about Griffin, but I don't know, man. I still think Giannis is a dog. You mentioned all the things that are going for him, and this is a prisoner of the moment thing, right? And it has to be because we're only 20 something games in, and he just dropped 64. So he's up there, man. I think he just passed Kareem tonight too as the Bucks all-time rebounding leader. So he's up there, man. I always got the utmost respect for Giannis, and so Luka's my fifth. Giannis is above him. That's probably who would have been fifth otherwise for me. Giannis is right there, I think,
So
but.
you have Giannis fourth.
Yes. I think that's what I sent him.
Oh my gosh.
Shut
Talk about
up.
take away a vote.
Shut
Also,
up.
you are poo-pooing my Giannis vote at five, and you have him all the way up at four. One
Well,
spot
okay.
ahead.
I told you just before we started recording, I thought him and Jokic could have been interchangeable, but not, I I don't know. Because
Jokic or Doncic?
Jokic, because Jokic is my third. We're kind of skipping now,
Oh,
but
wow.
this is why. This is why I said this. Because it is a prisoner of the moment thing. I think I have somebody that's past Jokic now because of the recent memory, the recent stuff that's going on. Jokic got ejected last week, which definitely didn't help his case. He also had two of his worst shooting efficiency performances of his career within the last month. So I just think because this is a prisoner of the moment thing, as great as he is, as much of an annual candidate as he is, you got to factor that stuff in when you're voting 20 games in.
Joel, who do you have? Luka Doncic
At
at
five.
five.
Great player, by the way. He's
Who
having a great year.
do you have at four?
Giannis, I'm locking that in at four.
Okay. I have so we're two for two, but we flipped them. I have Giannis at five, Luka at four. Who's your number three?
Jokic. Who's yours, Joe? Looks like you're panicking. Y'all can't see him, but he's like panicking
Wait, I this is cr wait.
right now.
Oh, I was looking.
Dude, spit it out.
No, I'm not. Okay, wait, who'd you have three?
Jokic.
Okay, I have Shea three.
Because as much as I'm gonna knock Jokic for recent memory, like Jokic is still Jokic. He's still a top three candidate to me. The Nuggets are still very, very good. So it was hard for me to. I mean, I thought about maybe putting Giannis three just because of this past week, but that's like two prisoner at the moment. So yeah, Jokic is definitely my third.
Yeah, I have
Explain Shea at three.
Okay, well, since we've totally gone out of order and we're running out of time, I have Joel Embiid number one, which I just think he's been incredible this year. What he's doing as a facilitator in that offense, and he's the reigning MVP, and he's playing even better, I think, on both ends of the floor than he did last year. I have Jokic too. Efficiency is not as high this year, but at the same time, he's shouldering a bigger offensive burden. They just got Jamal Murray back. We all know what Jokic is. That's as much of a, kind of he's earned that spot to me. And then I
Yeah,
have Shea
it's a gimme
three.
every year.
I have Shea three, which again, like, sounds like too high, too low. It's just crazy. We're talking about him as a top three player, but where do you have him?
So this is why Tim said he agreed with my sentiments because I had Embiid one, Shea too, but I told him after last night, I think they're interchangeable at this moment because we are presenting a moment. We are talking about this moment right now. And Shea, that was absolutely an MVP performance last night. And when you factor in, I think the impact on winning, even when they lost in SAC earlier in the week, like he went crazy. And that's when they're throwing constant double teams at him. I think the starters honestly just, well, do until it mattered, the starters let him down. And he dropped 43, bro. Like he's been phenomenal. Two-way guy, stamped two-way guy. Game winner yesterday, which was a moment, an MVP
Yeah.
moment. And I think not only just the impact on winning, but the leap this team has taken in terms of a winning team. I think that's what you got to consider. You made great points with Embiid. That's why I think they're interchangeable. So.
Yeah. So, I mean, we're talking about the same guys here. Shout out to Tyrese Halliburton, to LeBron James, to Kevin Durant. You made
Yeah.
the honorable mentions. That is going to do it for us today. We've got to run. Thank you so much for listening to the Thunder Buddies podcast, and we'll see you next time.